Hi everyone, and thank you for inviting me. So today I want to talk about how we can test probe the real presence inside of the ultracompact objects that we see in the sky of a real space-time singularity. So what we are interested in is the alternative scenario, a vacuum without a singularity. The main reason is that we basically think that singularity is only the signal that in some way general relativity is an incomplete theory. We know that in general relativity from the Parrot's theorem, you cannot avoid the formation of these singularities, both in gravitational collapse and in the cosmological evolution of an expanding universe. But probably it's because at this high energy in this scenario, the theory cannot be more trusted. And indeed, when a singularity is present in a space time, the theory is no more predictive. You cannot know, for example, what is before the Big Bang, and you cannot even define the space time. So we think. We expect that in a complete theory, instead, this singularity should be in some way regularized by quantum effects. And then, from this point of view, you have basically two alternatives to describe the ultracompact objects that we see. You can think that both the singularity and the horizon are not there. So you can think about horizon as compact objects. And you can obtain these objects with very high compactness over the limits of the compactness that you can reach in GR, going in modified theories of gravity or quantum theories of gravity, but also simply using some exotic matter that violates energy condition in general relativity. And there is a big zoo of possible horizon as compact objects, and in this talk I will focus on wormholes and compact stars. With compact stars having generically ultra-compact objects sourced by some matter whose density goes to zero at infinity quite quickly, so it can be considered localized. The other possibility is to only regularize the singularity, but to keep, not prevent the formation of a trapping region of an horizon. And in this case, you basically have still a vacuum, but without a singularity, a regular practice. In the past years, people tried to understand if also these regular vacuums can be described effectively in general relativity. So you can also assume that they are a solution of an unknown theory, but still can be in some way described by with the tools of general relativity, so with a space time, a smooth manifold. So some of my collaborators trying to understand how many possibilities are there.
Sorry, can you turn on the microphone?
Oh right. Sorry. Do you see the green light?
Yes.
Okay. Can you hear?
Perfect, thank you.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Before they told me to remember it, but of course I forgot it. Okay, sorry. So, as I was saying, some of my collaborators tried to understand how many types of regular black holes of space-time you can obtain with the tools of general relativity. And to do so, they started from the definition of a singular space-time. So, when you have a singularity, your space-time will be geodesic incomplete. That means that there will exist at least one geodesic that cannot be extended beyond a certain proper time. But it's my fault, this time.
It must be the microphone, but I don't know what to do with that.
Something here.
Oh.
Okay.
It's gone.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a little bird.
So when a space-time is singular, there will be at least one geodesic that cannot be extended beyond a certain proper time or a fine parameter. This means that there will be some particle trajectories that ends in a finite time. The point in which this trajectory ends is called the focusing point. It's a point which geodesics focus. And if you want to describe a regular solution, you need to avoid the deformation of this point. And you can do it or defocusing geodesics or pushing, but it is a really, at least less physical, possibility to push this focusing point at infinity in order to have still infinite geodesics also if you have a focusing. In the last cases, it's not guaranteed that you will end up in a regular spacetime. For example, because the spacetime could be geodesically complete but still have some divergences in the curvature scalars. And an example of this could be the inflationary universe in which you can push the singularity, the focusing point at infinite time in the past, but still you will have a singularity in the spacetime, in the curvature. So this was a little bit in a picture level. When you want to do, if you want to enter in the details, you can rely on a particularly useful parameter that is the expansion of geodesics that tells you how much a cloud of particles is basically expanding or contracting as it moves along the congruences. And basically, in the flat spacetime, in a regular spacetime, the ingoing you will have two types of null geodesics. Some geodesics will tend to go one towards the other, and some other geodesics will tend to go like one far from the other. In a regular sane spacetime, the ingoing geodesics will have negative expansions, and the outgoing one will have a positive one. When, because of gravity, also the positive expansion becomes negative, then you have a trapping region, a part of the spacetime that if you enter, you cannot leave. That is basically an horizon that has a sub-boundary on horizon. From the Perros theorem, you know that once you form the horizon, the trapping region, then under certain assumption, you cannot avoid the deformation of a singularity, of a point in which the expansion goes to minus infinity. These assumptions are general relativity, so that the Einstein equation works, the null energy condition, that tells you that basically you cannot have negative energy densities, at least if you measure it along the trajectory of a photon, and the presence of a non-compact Cauchy surface. That is basically tell you that the spacetime cannot be in some way finite. You cannot choose a compact hypersurface, evolve it, and cover all the spacetime. This could happen, for example, in a closed universe. If you want to avoid the formation of a singularity, you must assume that some of these hypotheses are violated, and then you can, in this way, create a defocusing point, a point in which this function come back to be positive and pass through zero. So accordingly to where this defocusing happens and what is doing in the meanwhile the expansion of ingoing geodesics, you can classify your type of regular black holes substantially in four types. The more physical one are the one in which the defocusing point is at a finite distance, a fine distance. And in this case, you can end up or in a double horizon. That means that your singularity is replaced by another inner horizon and a regular core. Or in what we call an Hindenburg wormhole, that is that your singularity is replaced by a wormhole throat. Of course, you can also obtain the infinite affine distance version of these two, but they are less physically reasonable features, so we will focus on the first two.
in the dishwasher or vacuum solution,
mm-hmm.
the metric changes sign as you go through the horizon.
Yeah,
this becomes time.
Yes.
So you, by time, you're forced on what you think about it.
Yes.
Yes. It's inevitable.
Exactly. And in the case of a regular backwards, you change again, and so you have not singularity. Yes.
So how do you avoid?
For ex-
how do you avoid singularity in classical GR?
You have to consider that there is you have to source your space-time with a matter that is basically violating energy conditions, so that can give you a negative gravitational force. You can imagine like a cosmological constant. You can see.
One other point, then I'll keep quiet. there's a literature on modified gravity.
Yes.
So that's another possibility, modifying Einstein gravity.
Yes, in that case, I think it's very interesting to understand if in this kind of theories, maybe you can have a regular solution also without some exotic matter. It's not clear for now because they always try to recover Schwarzschild, recover the black holes. But regular black holes in modified theories of gravity for now are not so studied. So I think it's an interesting field. So now we can complete our plot, our graph of possible alternatives to black holes with our regular black holes that, as you can see, are not contrary to respect to horizonless compact objects. At least in spherical symmetry, there are not so many possibilities. But another crucial point is that these two alternatives are not so different, so disconnected. And indeed, they can actually be described in some sense by the same metric. How you can do it? Introducing, varying a parameter that we call the regularizing parameter that enters the metric functions. When it is zero, you recover Schwarzschild. When it is small, you basically have a regular black hole spacetime. And when it is big, you have an horizonless object. Of course, since there are in spherical symmetry two types of regular black holes, you also have two families of these interpolating metrics. One goes from double horizons to compact stars, and the other one from hidden wormholes to real traversable wormholes. In literature, some examples of this type of metrics are already present. Maybe you have heard of the Hivard-Bardeen metric that are of the first type. Instead, the Simpson-Wiesen metric, that is a bit more complicated, is of the second type. Oh. So here I wanted to show you a little bit the structure of these objects. So in the plot, I hope you can see it. The dashed lines represent the horizons.
So by the way, we also have a hockey stick, if you want to use, to as a pointer. It's back there, you see, and that's it. So.
Okay, so these two dashed lines are the horizons. This blue line is the light ring, the unstable light ring, so the orbits of circular orbit of photons. And these red ones is an inner additional stable light ring that appears in the horizonless configuration. You can see that for small value of the regularizing parameter, you have two horizon and one light ring. Then at some critical value of L, the two horizon merges and disappears. So you have an horizonless configuration, but with this additional light ring that we will see is an important feature of these objects. For hidden wormholes, it's a little bit different. You have an horizon and a wormhole truth that is not shown here, but is at value of R equal L. So until a critical value at which the horizon becomes a truth, and also the location of the inner stable light ring. While the outgoing, unstable light ring is always present, also after a critical value in which it merges with the stable one. So a critical difference is that for double horizon, you cannot have too big value of L, because you end up in an object that will have no light ring, so will be too different from Schwarzschild. So you can have only a limited range of the regularizing parameter. Instead, in this case, you continue to have an unstable light ring also for less compact configurations.
May I ask a question? So like, these are not like solutions to the Einstein equation, right?
Not of vacuum, we will see, but not of vacuum Einstein equation.
So you explain like how do I need to change the action or like what type of matter you need to add
so,
these solutions?
So usually the philosophy is you don't know what is the real theory, and you are basically only using some models of possible structure of an effective spacetime. But actually, to really study some of their feature, you will see that I will, yes, consider an action, a theory, nonlinear electrodynamics, to study some feature, some phenomenological feature. But the philosophy usually is not that. So you don't want to rely on a specific theory. The aim is it's just to not choose a theory.
But is there like a theory?
Is
there like an action which would do something similar or not?
Zero like action.
Generally, is there an action that does this?
Yeah. Yes, there is. I will show.
So I have a naive question, but related. So you said you have an action. It's like you have something to account for the force that can counteract the gravitational.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. So here you have an inner horizon that can like occur, and usually occur we associate the inner horizon with having like an instability due to like this blue shift. So are you worried about that here as well?
Yes, I mean, these are, so there is like a lot of discussion about this lately, because so inner horizon are known to be like unstable. The name of the instability is mass inflation instability. You're referring to that. But actually they saw that when you take into account quantum effects, so semi-classical effects, you have another instability that goes in the opposite direction. So actually it's not so clear if this inner instability is real there, so if this inner horizon are stable or not. And in this other configuration, of course, you don't have this problem, but you pay this because you have a not simply connected solution. So there are problems in both sides. I actually developed a model of rotating black holes with an inner horizon that is not unstable, and you can do it turning the surface gravity to zero. So basically you have a two horizon, but the inner one is extremal, and so you don't have the instability.
I just wanted to clarify something, that the Martin-Haywood solutions are not solutions of Einstein's vacuum equations.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, all the mass is no longer at the set singularity. So
yes.
You have to choose a mass distribution.
You have to choose? You have to choose,
sorry? Name of R. You have to have mass.
Yeah, you have you have to have a diffused matter in some sense.
What is M of R for Haywood?
What is the aim of R?
The M of R function you have?
Ah, the M of R is, yes, it was before.
That's the function,
yeah. Yes. You can have something like that or like that. Okay, so let's pass to phenomenology. So we wanted to understand if these objects are distinguishable from singular black holes. So we studied how it will be the ring down signal of these objects, that is the last phase of the gravitational wave signal coming from the coalescence of ultra-compact objects. And basically, you can study the ring down signal in perturbation theory, because you can consider it as a perturbation of the stationary/static unperturbed space-time. And to do so, what is the problem? We studied the ring down, the real ring down, so the gravitational perturbation, but also test field perturbation. Why this? Because for gravitational perturbation, you have to choose a theory. So you have to interpret the stress energy tensor that you obtain if you put this solution in the Einstein equation as some matter to obtain the equation of motion. Instead, for test field perturbation, that of course are only an approximation, you don't have to make this choice. So in this case, an action that can give you these solutions for double horizon is Einstein, so the general relativity, plus nonlinear electrodynamics, and in particular, a nonlinearly coupled magnetic field. Here, L is the Lagrangian of this magnetic field.
So a matter field is a gauge field?
No.
What is that? Sorry, I'm confused.
So, what are you asking for F? What is
your
F?
Your matter field. So you perturb both the metric and the matter field.
Yes.
But I don't see any matter field except the gauge field A.
So A is a magnetic field.
Magnetic field?
Yes. It's like the Maxwell magnetic field, but with a different Lagrangian. So this is the stress, the how is it called? The the Maxwell tensor that is gives you the electric field and the magnetic field. In this case, you have only the.
So what is a matter field?
I think that's the matter. So mu is the only thing that's there.
The only matter is the magnetic field. You have a void plus a magnetic
field.
That's
what I was asking.
It's the magnetic field.
Yeah.
So I guess, are you saying that you could tune this FLF to get any metric you want, right, basically?
Basically, not every metric you want, every metric of the first kind, double horizon with an M of R. For the hidden wormhole type, you have also to add a phantom scalar field. So, okay, when once.
Like, I don't quite understand, like, what do you mean by like L, F? So, like, your mass as a function of radius is related to the action. Like,
yeah.
That's what it means, like, definition?
Yeah, basically, there is a. Relation between F and R. Basically, you can express the Lagrangian both as a function of F or of the radius. Because you have I never remember the technical name of things in electrodynamics, I don't know why. But yes, it's L of F of L of R.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, the idea is you have some nonlinear function of F, and then you could basically tune it to get. I mean, the simplest case, if it just is Maxwell, then it just gives you a Reisner-Nordstrom.
Exactly. It also was proved that with a Maxwell Lagrangian, you cannot have a regular solution.
But then if you have some, this L is that some funny behavior, then if it's nonlinear,
yes.
Then you could get a regular. So that's what it's like.
What is the source of the magnetic field?
The source of the magnetic field.
Because there's no electric charge.
Yes.
No. Physical bodies.
So this was also for simplicity. I mean, you can also add an electric field.
Yeah, but this electric charge is neutralized.
Yes, you mean astrophysically you can have...
minus.
Yes. I mean, you have also to consider that this is only a way to study this the perturbation of these objects. So, actually, you think that this stress energy tensor is not really coming from a Lagrangian, from a theory of electrodynamics. You think that maybe this stress energy tensor comes from a modification of the other part of the Einstein equation, of the Einstein tensor. But yes, actually, you know, linear electrodynamics has its dignity, and it was when you consider loop correction of electron positron, you can have these nonlinear electrodynamics models. So it's not so unrealistic. Of course, you have a magnetic field without having any matter density because you're in void, but I mean, yes, it's a model. So once we had the equation of motion, we perturbed the metric and the matter field. We did all the standard computation that to find the characteristic frequencies of the ring down of these objects. I think that I want to stress, because like made me lose a lot of time, is the fact that usually quasi-normal most computation, these computations are done keeping separate two sector of perturbation based on their polarity, so axial perturbation and polar perturbation, according to how they behave under parity inversion. Actually, you cannot do it in this case because the matter field is a magnetic field, so it has opposite polarity to respect to the metric. So there is this strange mixing between axial perturbation of the gravitational field and polar of the magnetic field. If you do not consider it, you obtain a system that is impossible, but people in the past didn't realize it because was like neglecting one of the equations without checking that it could be really obtained by the other two, like in the Schwarzschild solution. Unfortunately, if you do things in the right way, you obtain a worse equation that is coupled, so you have coupling between matter and gravitational perturbation. But this equation, with the addition of the right boundary condition, gives you a quasi problem that you can solve to find the discrete set of frequencies that solve it. In the test field perturbation, instead you have a much simpler equation that of course has a potential that depends on the spin of your test field perturbation, and we analyze it for various value of the spin. The two methods of course leads to different results numerically. But qualitatively, there are some features that seems to be common, and so probably right, universal. The first one was kind of, we kind of expected, is the fact that for horizonless configuration, where you don't have an horizon, you obtain some modes with a very small imaginary part. This means that you have a very big damping time. So the damping time of a mode is one over the imaginary part of your frequencies, because you can model the ring down as a series of damped sinusoids. So what does this mean? If these modes live too much, they could lead to nonlinear instability, because they are basically due to the presence of, in the space-time, of this stable light ring. So basically this perturbation accumulates between this minimum and the maximum of the potential, and for this reason are slowly damped. The interesting point that we found, because basically our model was interpolating between different configuration, we realized that this stable light ring was already present in the extremal regular black hole case, that is the limiting case between regular black holes and horizonless configuration, so when the two horizons merge in one. In this case, the stable light ring is exactly at the horizon, so maybe you cannot consider it really stable, it's metastable, because from one side you can escape the orbit. And indeed, the imaginary part in this case is not so small, but still, these solutions are already known to be unstable. Every extremal regular black hole is unstable because of an instability called Arretakis instability that is actually connected with some conserved quantity symmetries of extremal horizons. and was well known mathematically. But until now, it's not clear what physically should happen. Also because it was studied linearly, and at linear level is only an asymptotic instability. It's a strange instability that becomes a genuine instability only at non-linear level. So the guess is that basically Lightring instability and Arietakis instability could be described by the same phenomenon physically. So the trapping of some orbits at the stable Lightring. Of course, this is only a guess, and to confirm it, we have to study these objects at nonlinear level, probably numerically, and we will see. So the other important stuff things is that your spectrum is of course different from the Schwarzschild spectrum, and so the natural question is: are these differences big enough for us to realize it when we will have a next future of gravitational wave detectors? Starting understand this, we use a data analysis framework. This is called PARSPEC, that it was actually developed for the ring down in modified theory of gravity, but can be adapted here. Basically, this framework allows you to isolate the dependence of quasi-normal modes from the source parameters. As you can see, the modes depends on the mass, and if you consider rotating solution, on the spin. But you isolate it in order to have some corrections that does not depend on the mass. And so in this way, you can stack multiple events, multiple observations, as if these observations have different parameters. And this way, you can obtain preciser results on your deviation from the GR spectrum. We simulated an observation of the ring down of these regular black holes. And through a Monte Carlo Markov chain, we obtain the probability distribution posterior on these parameters. What we have obtained. So, of course, the results that you obtain depends on the value of your regularizing parameter. If it is too small, for example, Planckian, your solution is too similar to Schwarzschild to have a spectrum of quasi-normal modes that is distinguishable from the Schwarzschild one. But if you have macroscopic value of L, like 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 2, the mass of the objects, then with an order of 10 observations, 100 observations at a signal to noise of 100, that is completely doable with next generation of gravitational wave detector, you can exclude the hypothesis that you are observing singular GR black holes, and 90% confidence level. You can see this also from these plots. This is the real part of the frequency, and it is basically, if it is centered in zero, this means that we are observing GR. Instead, it's pushed far enough from zero, from GR, to tell you that your preferred theory to describe your observation is not GR. For the imaginary part, the correction are less stringent, at least for double horizon. For hidden wormholes, it's a little bit different. Of course, this is a preliminary analysis, in the sense that we analyze not rotating black holes that are not so realistic, and if you add some spin correction, the results will be worse, but we don't know how much worse. Also, the population, the observation that we have simulated as a mass distribution that is not completely astrophysically motivated, is a log flat distribution, and we are planning to extend this analysis in a more complete way.
So can I ask, so what is the result from this? That what is the limit on L that you find?
It depends on the model, so if it are hidden wormholes or black holes. but was of the order, I remember, 10 to the minus 3, I think, for double horizons, and 10 to the minus 2 for the other one. But of course, this is for this number of observations,
yeah,
and with the signal to noise. And I think that we will have better, actually, observations. So it's kind of promising for now.
So are you saying you exclude GR?
Exclude GR in the sense that your observation seems to tell you in a probability, in probability words, that it's more probable not to have a singular black, that you are not observing a singular black hole, but a black hole mimicker, something different. So if you use as observation GR with Schwarzschild, you will obtain a posterior distribution center in D0. If you use these objects, then you realize that they are not singular black holes. Okay, then I want also to mention that there is another way to distinguish these objects from singular black holes that are echoes. Echoes are features of the ring down signal that are present for horizonless configuration. So when you have not an horizon, but a surface that can partially reflect your perturbation, your gravitational perturbation. What happens is that then your perturbation will be partially stuck in the cavity between the surface that is reflecting it and the peak of the potential. So what happens is that you will see the leaks out of these trapped modes, so you will see smaller and smaller copies of the ring down, like this. This is the standard signal coming from the potential, and these are the smaller and smaller copies. And this is an animation that I've done this morning at 6 o'clock, because for the jet lag I couldn't sleep. And I hope I can manage to reproduce it. Okay. So the first part, this is the ring down. And then here, you have trapped modes that are leaks out and gives you the egos. Now that I see it, it's kind of ugly, but I can do better. It was 6 o'clock, I mean. So if you stick with this approximation, that is linear approximation, so perturbation on a fixed background, the time delay between these echoes will be always the same, and it is basically the two times the light crossing time between the peak and the surface. And as you can see, this time delay depends crucially on the compactness of your object, and it depends on it logarithmically. This is important because it also allows you to detect the echoes even of objects that has only Planckian correction to the horizon scale, so that they have some surface at a Planckian length from the would-be horizon. So very ultra-compact objects, very similar to Schwarzschild. What is the problem? The problem is that you are speaking of something that is happening near the surface of this object, so near the would-be horizon, that is a part of the space-time with strong gravity, with the strong peeling of outgoing geodesics. Now, if you have a black hole, you don't worry about it, because this peeling is only of outgoing radiation, so reflected radiation. That is not present when you have an horizon. You hit all the perturbations that arise. But in this case, you realize, studying geodesics, that perturbation tends to accumulate near the surface, creating high density, so back reaction effects, and even instability. But there are also other known instability of these objects, the light ring one, which I was talking about, and for rotating solution, the ergo region instability. Now, this instability can be quenched in some way if back reaction is taken into account, and in particular if absorption is taken into account. And this was already done in a coherent way, but in some sense an incomplete way, because people took into account that each time the perturbation hit the surface, its amplitude will decrease because it will be partially absorbed by the object. What was neglected was the fact that if the object absorbs this energy, then its mass, its internal energy, will also increase. Since the energy of the ring down was very small, this was neglected. But actually, what was the problem? That if you consider very compact objects, also a small, very small, 10 to the minus 8, the mass of the black holes, increase of the mass of the internal energy leads to a big change in the compactness of the objects. And this means that your time delay, that depends logarithmically in the compactness of the objects, will change. So basically what is happening is that your signal will not be periodic. The time delay between different echoes will not be the same. And this is important because actually when you construct templates of echoes to search for it in the gravitational wave signal, you rely on the periodicity, usually rely on the periodicity of the signal. Of course, the change in the time delay is quite small, can reach 5-6% relative change. And it is also not so, like, I mean, this is an order of magnitude estimates, but of course the signal is changing already during the first echoes, because, I mean, the energy is absorbed when the echo is at the surface, and then he has to travel back to us in a different space-time. Also, it's not simple in the true signal to precisely evaluate the time delay between different echoes. So another point that you can raise is that when you absorb some energy, probably you will try to expand to reach the original compactness in order to stay each time at the same compactness. Because if you don't do it, then you can basically collapse into a black hole because you're absorbing energy without a limit. But what the problem is that if you think this, you basically have to require, in most situations, superluminal motion of the surface to prevent this collapse. That, I mean, it's not impossible, it depends on what is basically sourcing the space-time. But I think that it's more physically reasonable that the expansion will not be so perfect. That you will not stay really at the original same compactness, that there will be some transient phases which you have already absorbed energy, but the expansion is not already reached the original compactness. And in this case, you basically have the same signal that you have when you don't consider expansion, at least for the first 2-3 echoes. Then it will become periodic because the energy in each echo, the energy amount will decrease, and so also the change in the time delay. But we have also to say that the first 2-3 echoes are the one that we hope to detect, because then the amplitude is very small. So finally, I want also to mention something on which I didn't work, so I'm not an expert at all, but I think it should be mentioned, is that these objects could be distinguished also by infrared observations. So for regular black holes, the deviations are very small and probably not detectable with the future technology, the next future technology. In the case instead in which you have a partially reflecting surface on horizonless configuration, new features comes up, and in particular some additional rings that are basically due to the photons that before reaching you scatter are reflected on the surface. And of course, what you will see with the real telescope that is not perfect will not be some rings, but a light region instead of a completely dark region inside the accretion disk. I want to stress that this does not mean that the observation done until now of M87 or Sagittarius S star are saying to us that are excluding the possibility of an horizonless object. Because actually, how much light you will see depends on the absorption reflection coefficient of your object. If your object reflects a small amount of the radiation, then your ring, your light rings will be dim and not detectable with the current technology. So we have to wait to really exclude this possibility.
Sorry, just question before you wrap up. So here you're pushing to the maximal rotation, but
yeah.
You don't have to do that to get horizonless.
No. Yeah, indeed. This was only an example. I choose a paper, and in this paper, basically, you reach horizonless configuration. I think naked singularity, actually, with the going super critical. But of course, it's only an example. You don't need it. So, summarizing, we have two alternatives to singular black holes, and we can describe both with the same metric in order to study them, their phenomenology. The ring down of these objects seems to deviate from the Schwarzschild one, and this is important because it means that actually with the ring down, with the spectroscopy, we can actually probe also the inner structure of compact object. It's not a real spectroscopy. It's not only about the exterior of your spacetime. And also in practice, this deviation seems detectable in the next future, with the next future of gravitational wave detectors. Furthermore, these objects are also distinguishable thanks to some additional features like the ECOS or the additional light rings in the shadows, but we have to pay attention to the limits of our models of the theoretical part, because first of all we don't know the real theory that is sourcing this that could source these solutions, and most of the models done until now are in linear approximation, and I show that this can actually gives you a very different signal, that nonlinear interaction can drastically change your signal and your capability to detect it. Thank you.
Questions for Vanya?
Maybe, yes.
One of the bizarre features of general relativity is that when the star collapses, you have an exponential growth of extreme time dilation and redshift. First published by Oppenheimer and Steiner.
You have extreme tidal.
So you never actually see the horizon fall from the outside.
Ah, yes, yes. This is also a crucial point in the sense that eternal solutions like Schwarzschild or the ones of regular solution that I showed are an approximation. Of course, the real objects are dynamical objects.
So. Even in the merger of the black holes, they still don't have detectable horizons for me.
Mm-hmm.
But as they get closer, it takes exponentially time before they actually touch,
mm-hmm.
although they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey. So, for the Hayward-Bardeen solutions, you must still have the same situation.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know actually the redshift function. Okay, yes, you still have an horizon, so yes, you should have. Yes.
Exponentially increase. Mm-hmm. It's nicely described in Weinberg's book, Cosmology and Gravitation.
I have it, but I didn't read it.
1972.
Jesse?
Sorry. So in your conclusion, you mentioned sort of pursuing this or this being reachable to constrain with next generation gravitational wave, detections. And I'm curious, if a lot of confidence in your model beyond this linear approximation, I'm wondering what kind of constraining power or what's attainable with like current gravitational wave detections.
If you consider nonlinear.
Yeah, like say all your modeling tools are in place and you're ready to go. Yeah.
So if you're saying if this is actually possible, so to detect this correction. Of course, it seems so in the sense that in this approximation, it seems so. I don't know if you consider a complete theory, the right theory, if you will have some smaller correction. It depends on too many stuff. I mean, also when you consider only a model like the one I considered, this depends on the value of your parameter. But I think that is still quite exciting see that there are some cases in which it is possible, so that we are not hopeless. Then we will see. But I think also in the next 5-10 years, some answer will come. Mm.
I guess this is a very sort of concrete follow-up question. In your forecast that you showed with the linear approximation, you showed forecasts for 10 or 100 events with signal-to-noise of 100. And how does that signal-to-noise compare to like events detected by LIGO? I don't actually know that often.
This is big. So it's a high signal-to-noise for the current LIGO. But it is not at all high for the next, for the Einstein telescope or for LISA, that actually they will have also dozens of signal with that signal to noise ratio.
LIGO is more like 20 or
30
times?
10? Ring down SNR is 10.
That's for the ring down?
Yes.
Yeah, the ring down is worse.
That's ring down. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank
yes,
you.
That's a naive question. Can you go back to your previous slide? So your second point, you only compare with Schwarzschild black holes, but realistic black holes are not Schwarzschild.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Yeah, this for sure, in the sense that this is the preliminary analysis. In spherical symmetry, this deviation seems to be big enough. And now we are planning to do it in adding rotations with realistic black holes. Probably you will need in this case more sources, not 100, maybe 1,000. But I think that the point, the order of magnitude will not change so much.
And also, can you say a bit more about the possible theory of matter that can lead to this compact horizonless stars?
So the only important point for this matter is that it should violate energy condition and gives you a gravity an opposite force to gravitational collapse in some sense.
Does it have to be fermionic matter, right? You should have some degeneracy pressure to counteract.
I don't think so.
Gravitational pull.
You're saying you have a condensate, you cannot, actually don't think so, because I mean there are boson stars, so objects that are sourced by different type of matter. For this solution, until now, only nonlinear electrodynamics was known to lead to this type of solutions, but I don't think there are constraints in this sense on the type of matter. I should think about it.
So can you like draw this LRF function, because I guess I don't have a sense of how it should be. Or maybe you could
so
or
you have some picture here.
I can draw it if I look back at it.
I did it that, okay.
Actually maybe I have it.
A lot of it's linear in Maxwell theory, and I guess for your regular black hole is not linear anymore. I don't know if it just is rhythmic maximum or what does it do?
So you can derive it from M of R, so we can look at it. So M of R. Oh, why are you saying this? Maybe I can do like that. Okay. You take this smaller function, you do the derivatives to respect to R, so you will have some power law. I mean, I think one R two yeah, but it is the denominator.
Yes.
So is this over R? Is M prime of R over R? And then F is 1 over R. I remember to have looked at it. I think it has some different extremal point, actually. And it depends crucially on if you have an asymptotic de Sitter or anti de Sitter in the core, in the sense that I remember that if you have anti de Sitter in the core, so if you're going to R equals 0, you can approximate to anti de Sitter. You even have a negative Lagrangian, so you have to take a constant and push it back. So for sure it has a minimum.
Okay.
But I don't remember. I can...
So it should become a constant, basically, that's what you're saying. It's LF, at large F should become a constant.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But I have to check it.
And for horizonless ones, it should go negative or something?
For horizonless, for sure you can do it, in the sense that it's still a solution. You have to look what happens to M prime of R when L is big. I can look at the plots. I can.
Maybe the last. If there are no other questions, then okay. So John, you get the last question.
Yeah,
just maybe 1 minute.
It's what's your solution? GR. As an interior solution, it's called the interior Schwarzschild solution. It's described by a perfect fluid in momentum tensor. So this requires, it's really rather unphysical. It
so the interior is
like a body. It doesn't describe a perfect fluid.
No, not a perfect fluid at all.
Accept this, but whatever. It's mathematical.
Yeah, no, these kind of models are purely mathematical. You use it to have some hint, on what can happen, you know, what would be the signal of this kind of object. I'm not saying that the ultra-compact object that we see are precisely this one with this model. This is a tool, an instrument to understand what is happening.
The Earth doesn't look like this inside.
Okay, so on that note, if there are no other questions, again, a reminder, my name is going to be here at the rest of the week, her office 373, so just please, if you can talk to her if you want to. Thank you.